The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com. Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course the DraftKings Network. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, producer number nine. So much more than a producer. Live from Bar Canada here at the D. How you doing, man?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Rocking my DKN quarter zip, but it's a little warm up here.
It is. Did you notice that?
Yeah, it's a little toasty up here.
As soon as we get within 20 feet of this shield table we have here, the temperature went up like 15 degrees.
Yeah, I've discussed this with the crew once or twice before, too. I don't really understand how that works because, we're in a very wide open room, yet somehow this quarter can get warmer or colder.
It's a
very impressive air conditioning system.
It's funny you bring that up. I noticed the same. We have a sneaky good show. I don't know why I feel the need to say sneaky, as if we wanted to, like, shock you with it at the very last moment. It's kind of stupid.
Shocking names we have on deck today.
Yeah. Jason Weingarten wrote a piece at VSiN.com, his baseball season longs. And I believe the name of the piece is how to bet $5,000 in baseball futures. And if you do the math, what did you say it came out to?
I believe he failed in his own project. I
think it's like $8,000.
I think the last line in the article is, well, it really came out to like a little over $8,000. Whatever.
$5,000, $8,000. Well, we won't spoil the entire piece. We want everybody to go to Visa.com, but we'll get some of his thoughts on some of those plays beyond what he's already given on the show, which was Pete Alonso. Most home runs, which he gave out last week. Dr. Bob will join us. This is his time of year. Conference tournaments historically has done oh so well. He's got some plays. So we hear from the good doctor, who, by the way, is not a physician, Kelly, not an actual physician.
What movie?
Yes, there was any.
Someone has a heart attack. Still call 911.
Yeah, don't call
911. It's a hangover.
Sia Najad, some golf. You've got golf plays. So does Sia. We'll talk to Sia Najad about the Arnold Palmer this week. And Will Hill will join us. We'll get the standard fare of picks from Will. Will doesn't know this, by the way. He's probably listening, but he doesn't know. I'm going to ask him some just macro questions about basketball, pro and college, because we talk about certain things that have developed on both levels of basketball, but I don't know that we ever really discuss the theories as to why. So obviously we know NBA offensive efficiency, the records keep getting broken by teams every year now in recent memory. Why? What are the theories as to why? I know there's officiating, but is it as simple as teams figured out spacing? We'll get to Will's thoughts on that. College basketball. We didn't really talk about this a lot this year because Wishnev had us sort of in a gag order of you can't, and then Wishnev himself brings it up on a podcast on a Megapod, so it's like, okay, now we can talk about it. And this won't apply in conference tournaments or the NCAA tournament. But why did college teams not all of a sudden, because it's kind of been growing, but this year it was like this. Everybody was on the same email, and they just stopped fouling late in games like they used to. So why did
really?
That happen?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I haven't been watching enough to notice that because that's the stuff that drives me insane.
Yeah, I just want theories. Like, what? Yeah. I guess we know that it happened, but why? Did they all just watch so much NBA? Did they all get load management into their heads? Or, what was the story on that? So we'll talk to Will.
Charlie Hustle took a chill pill. Take it easy, kid. Take it easy, ninth kid off the bench. All right? You don't need to impress the coach that bad today.
And it's Indian Wells today, baby. Let's go. Tennis is de facto fifth major. Drew Dinsick and I did a Beating the Book podcast, as we do every year, on Indian Wells. 10 days of tennis. Well, at least a week and a half, let's say, of tennis. It begins today. Begins today at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. But the podcast actually has legs because the folks who have the first round buys, they don't play till Friday. So you'll be able to play futures in this. We'll get into some of my Indian Wells picks. I have three futures plays that I made, and I did have four first round plays today. Do you want to do those now? Or you want to do football first? What do you want to do?
We can hit those quick. Yeah.
All right, let's hit them quick. So here are the futures plays that I made in this tournament. No surprise. What do you know? Gil played Iga Świątek to win this at +270. This is as slow of a hard court as it comes. It's a grainy hard court that plays into her strength. She won this 2 years ago. But she does have competition. Elena Rybakina, who won this last year, is on her half of the bracket. I took Iga at +270, which to me is still a good price, despite the fact that she's the number one player in the world and she's the prohibitive favorite. Not the prohibitive favorite, but she's a favorite in every tournament she pretty much enters at this point. Ex-grass. She wouldn't necessarily be on grass, though possibly as well. I took Naomi Osaka to win Q3 at 10-1. Now, this is a wild card play. I brought her up on the podcast with you. By the way, Drew from the slopes at Aspen doing the podcast yesterday.
Obviously. Yeah.
Pristine audio.
That's what Sean said, too.
From his audio, well, so much better than mine in the middle of the casino at midday, right? From the slopes of Aspen, talking tennis. Not your average podcast. But I brought up Osaka, and the reason I do is because, again, besides Iga, the only player on the women's tour, currently active player, who has won four slams is the somewhat forgotten by the casual fan, Naomi Osaka, who is back playing tennis after having a child. And she's in of the quarters, she's in the one that doesn't involve Iga, Rybakina, or Sabalenka. She's in the Coco Gauff quarter. And so at 10-1, I thought that was worth a flyer, so I played her there. And then the only other one, and this admittedly was a nudge from Drew, because I was sort of on the fence about it, but I saw Rafa at 38-1. This is sort of in the Osaka vein, where you don't know exactly what you're getting. And in Nadal's case, we have not seen him play tennis in quite some time. This is his last stretch of tennis. Maybe it's this calendar year. We don't know exactly. He certainly will rev it up for clay season. But this is the one hard court he wanted to be in. And Rafa was in the finals as recently as 2 years ago when he lost to Taylor Fritz here at Indian Wells. 38-1 to win it all. As far as the plays today.
Who else is in Rafa's quarter?
Let me get that for you. No, it's all right. On the fly. We'll do it on the fly. In Rafa's quarter, that is the Medvedev quarter, if you will. But it's also got Dimitrov. It's also got Fritz. So Fritz has really good numbers. Yeah. And Fritz won this tournament 2 years ago. He beat Rafa. His numbers in California are always great. As far as the matches today specifically, the men's match that I have, I would not play it at the current price. These are all at VSiN.com/picks. I made them last night. Every host, every guest, every sport on this network, their picks will end up at VSiN.com/picks for subscribers. Dominic Koepfer was my men's pick over Alexander Shevchenko, but I got him at -122 last night, and I'm seeing -143 right there. So I would not play that anymore. So that's off the board. Again, pays to be a subscriber. But all the ladies' plays are in play. Daria Seville, I got at +111 against Bernarda Pera. She's in short minus money. I'd still play it, though. I'd still make an exception there, and I'd still play Daria Seville over Bernarda Pera. I do have Tatiana Maria over Arantxa Rus at +105. And the long shot of the day, our girl Katie Valenets over the great young Mira Andreeva. I just think this price is way off, and I think combination of Valenets just getting everything back to her, the weather conditions could fluster Andreeva in this one. And Valenets' hardcore numbers are great. So +235 is the flyer of the bunch.
Bet's giving Andreeva or the sister?
That's the good Andreeva.
This is the good one.
By the way, her sister's good too, but Mira could be great.
Be a legend. She'll be a legend around here forever. Until next Bet's giving.
So this is against Mira Andreeva. All right. That's the, again, if you want a much deeper dive, Beating the Book, BNB Paribas Indian Wells podcast is out now at the Beating the Book feed. So I just retweeted it out on my Twitter at Beating the Book. Football. Kirk Cousins, he's the dude that's controlling the quarterback free agency market. All this talk about Justin Fields, it's really about Kirk Cousins. Falcons are the favorite at -225, remaining with the Vikings is +150. Everybody else is a double-digit long shot. And here's the deal. Kirk Cousins, all things being equal, probably would stay in Minnesota if they gave him a long-term deal. But he's going to be 36 years old. He's coming off the Achilles injury. And again, that's how mere mortals should be described when they come off an Achilles injury at that age, not this Aaron Rodgers nonsense we heard last year. But the Falcons are interested in Cousins first. And the story with the Vikings is that they have their own interest, and Kirk has his. Kirk, if the Vikings were to offer him a long-term deal at, I would even say, a discounted price, because the man has made $230 million in his career, most of that sort of, you know, really capitalizing on the system when he was in Washington, where he kept betting on himself on one-year deals, and Daniel Snyder refused to give him a long-term deal. So he was making north of $40 million at that time.
I mean, you could argue Kirk Cousins handles offseason better than any NFL quarterback.
Maybe the greatest businessman of his era, really, honestly. So the Vikings, if they only are going to offer him 1 year, he might bounce. because he's more interested in the long-term security than I think he is the actual size of the contract. And this whole thing about March 13th, that if the Vikings were to sign him after that, they'd take a $28.5 million hit. So Falcons want him.
Yeah.
That's why they're the favorite.
It's starting to appear more and more like that. Everything you just said about Minnesota, I mean, they could have signed him already. This could have happened already
yes.
if it was Minnesota. I thought it was going to be obviously back to Minnesota, but
they said if he didn't have any other suitors at the combine.
Yeah, I'll tell you. You know what I've heard?
It would have.
Reports, rumors, whatever, over the past 24 hours, some of this more true than others. I think I've heard that, let's see, they've been in Atlanta looking at schools. The wife's family is from the area, as we've talked about before. There was a discussion about Kyle Pitts' number being exchanged or something like
that. Is his wife's family from Atlanta? I thought that was Russell Wilson. Sierra's family's from Atlanta.
I think her cousins has some connection there as well.
Okay.
There's like all things, though, in the past 24 hours, I feel like, have just been coming out.
Okay, and the Russell Wilson thing, which we talked about yesterday. By the way, great article about Kirk Cousins, if you're interested in all that, from Kevin Seifert at ESPN.com, why this is happening with Cousins. Russell Wilson, we talked about this yesterday, and we were pretty much dead on that when this reposted, yes, the Steelers would still be the favorite, but the Raiders were essentially cut in half. Plus 250 is exactly where he is at the Raiders.
We nailed that.
I think the plus 250 is the play here.
I mean, it's going to be, it feels like Steelers, Raiders. I mean, if we're thinking Falcons for Kirk Cousins, I mean, it's Steelers, Raiders, Vikings for Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, right?
Full disclosure, we can't bet. We don't have this available to us in Nevada, so none of these are actual bets for us. By the way, Justin Fields, the Falcons, remains a short shot at plus 125, the Steelers at plus 250. But Kirk Cousins will be the first domino to drop, yeah. And then everybody else will figure out their place. We'll talk golf with Sia Najad. Will Hill will join us. That's next. Baseball is back, and what better way to hit off the Grapefruit and Cactus Leagues than with VSiN's free MLB betting primer. This primer will tell you how to bet on spring training and continue all season long with our VSiN experts' World Series futures analysis. Our free MLB betting primer is basic baseball betting advice for those new to betting MLB, plus a breakdown on how to use Sabermetrics for more data-driven bettors to make this your best season yet. Bet the MLB smarter this year. Download the free MLB betting primer now for free at VSiN.com/guide. That's VSIN.com/guide. Skill Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Mike Alvarez, longtime listener, loyal listener, hilarious. He is accusing me of having an East Coast bias of rappers on this show.
Wow.
Can I just tell you?
I feel like if anything, it'd be the other way.
What would you put the odds on us having the Wu-Tang Clan on this show talking March Madness in a couple weeks when they're here in town?
I don't know. Don't get me excited.
It's a possibility.
That'd be incredible. Are you serious?
Just a possibility. Yes. Just want to throw that. I don't know that it's going to happen. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
All right.
There's your bias, baby.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can follow him on Twitter at NotTheWillHill. He is the host of his own podcast, cleverly entitled Shoulda Bet More. He's also one of the stars of the Bear Bets pods over there at Fox Sports, which Chris Falica, is that how you pronounce it? Chris Falica is the host of?
Yep.
I believe it's Will Hill, everybody. How you doing, Will?
What's up, boys? What's going on? I would say plus 250 for that Wu-Tang thing, that Wu-Tang prop.
Plus 250. Okay. Can you imagine?
It's not outrageous. Not outrageous pricing.
What do you think about the brackets? Should be a fun conversation. Okay, Will, I teased this at the top of the show. You may or may not have been listening. I'm curious, before we get into your plays here, about a couple things in basketball, and I want to just get your theories as to why, because it occurs to me we talk about these things, and we don't often posit theories on this. So one, college basketball, which again, Wishnev had us on a gag order on this most of the year, but then he brought it up on the podcast, so now we feel on the Super Bowl megapod of all things, and so we feel like we could talk about this now, because it doesn't really apply in conference tournaments and March Madness. But college basketball has trended over the last couple years as something that we always know as bettors and as just observers, oh, there's a lot of fouling at the end of games, to something that sort of dissipated. And this year, it really seemed to fall off a cliff. Okay, that's great. But what's your theory as to why?
Yeah, I'm not a great person to ask, because as much as I'm betting college basketball, I'm live betting, I'm watching more of the scores. My typical night is I pull up the app and I'm just going through the scores and looking for certain points in the game where I'm looking to jump in on the over or the under. So I'm I'm following what's happening with the scores, but I'm not watching the games as much. So I don't even know that there is as much non-fouling. I'll take Todd's word for it. But again, I'm watching the scores more than the games. I know the totals late are inflated, and I just think that's because scoring is up in general, and they're just adjusting it. But you look up, and sometimes when you think a late over is a good play, you look up and you need like 20 points in the last 3.5 minutes, and that's too many points. So they definitely inflated the totals late. I don't know if it's people say, hey, there's going to be fouls, so they play the over, but the totals are definitely inflated. I know Todd swears that there's less fouling, but again, I don't know if that's just handpicking a few instances or he's dead on where across the board, it's not as prevalent. So again, I'm watching the scores more than the game, so I'm not sure. Did you have a theory? Because
no,
I mean, even if you're going to tell me, hey, it's 100% true, there's not as much fouling. Okay, then the next logical step is why, and I'm trying to think of what it could be, and I'm drawing a blank. I don't know what the I really can't think of a reason in terms of like what would make sense in terms of the new landscape of college basketball and why, unless these teams are just. Like, I always think early in the season, I've noticed that because teams, they don't practice late game situations, so they're just not as efficient. So sometimes those late game overs are troublesome because they don't know to score quick, foul, all that. You got younger teams, you got inexperienced teams where they don't have that down pat. But later in the year, conference play, the games are more important. That seems to iron itself out. If it hasn't this year, I'm kind of stumped too.
Oh, I mean, certainly moving forward, it's not going to happen. But it's just, so that's interesting that you even question the premise itself. You think Todd might be handpicking. I don't know that he is, but I don't have a theory because it felt like it was almost like this seeping in of NBA load management in some weird way where they just decided to punt on games that they didn't used to oftentimes. But I don't have a theory as to why.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah. Is it a younger these kids today, is it a younger generation where, hey, they're down 7 with 30 seconds left and they just say, screw it, and the game's over? You have a 2% chance to win. Well, I mean, maybe it's a generational thing. I mean, I
guess. These kids today, that's always the answer. If it weren't for those pesky kids.
Time score situation will just lined up like the perfect example. I feel like it's the kids when they were like up, you know, down 9 and they're fouling with 12 seconds left. That was always like, all right, man, like just let it go.
What I'm referring to is instances where you would absolutely foul and they just seem to let it go sometime. Like, what is happening? What am I watching? Yeah. And then the other one is the NBA. We know that if you're a analytics head, you don't have to be. You can do it by eyesight too. You obviously know that the offensive efficiency numbers have been. These records are getting broken every year now, and yeah. I'm curious as to your theory on that beyond officiating. You know, allowances. Is it just as simple as teams figured out spacing finally? Like, what happened here?
Yeah, I think it's the spacing. I do think the officiating is a big part of it. And then I know that I'm sure Kelly could talk about this too. Since the All-Star break, there's been a noticeable shift in the way the games are being officiated, where usually, I mean, the refs take it to the extreme where if you're not in legal guarding position, any sort of contact the defense is liable for, and it's just a free throw fest. And since the All-Star break, I know a lot of people say, hey, that's not the case. They're just, they're letting them play a lot more, which, I mean, look, free throws, we know, are the key to overs or unders, because not only do you get points, but the clock stops and, you know, you get in the bonus. It's just, it's a compounding effect. So I do think a lot of it's the free throws, the threes. I don't think it's great for the league, too. I don't know that the league loves it. There's just a perception that every game's 140 to 130. It's just, there's always been a perception that, hey, they don't play any defense in the NBA, even if it's pace and it's more in terms of the efficiency isn't that much different. People don't look at it that way. So I don't think it's great for the league that you have all these huge scores. I do think they'll dial it back a little where they're trying to get a little more defense in the game and make the scores more reasonable.
Yeah, the free throw numbers have been down significantly since the All-Star break. That feels like that was a pretty obvious memo sent out about not letting these teams get to the line as much. So that one's been interesting. I think the other one that's been, you know, fascinating to track, I mean, this is always since Steph Curry we're stretching out defenses more and more. You got to cover more ground. It makes it more difficult. We've talked about that a lot. I think what's happened in recent years, and I was reading some study like a couple weeks ago from someone at Harvard, someone way smarter than me, about the two-point shot attempt now being back to worth more than the three-point attempt because you have so many shooters that are taking three-point shots that aren't efficient three-point shooters that it's now opened up that, but you've stretched out defenses, it's opened up that mid-range for guys like DeMar DeRozan, who, you know, has kind of had a resurgence in his career because he's been able to score back in the mid-range and not have to rely on three-point shots because there's actually room to operate there.
With every trend that you exploit, something else opens up.
Exactly.
And here we're reverting a little bit. Any plays in the NBA or college hoops tonight?
Nothing in the NBA. I play one or two games, like maybe a week, sometimes a month in the NBA. The last NBA side I bet was the Clippers last week against the Lakers. I was like, man, this Clippers team owns the Lakers. That, you know, they own this head-to-head matchup. They're just the better team. They're up 20 something in the fourth quarter, and I look up and they're, you know, it's tied and they end up losing. So I'm taking a little break from the NBA, especially with March here. But college, I did play Seton Hall on the money line. It's right around -115, -120. I just think Villanova, this game's in Seton Hall. I think Seton Hall's probably a slightly better team. I'm surprised it's only one. They've got the best player on the floor in Richmond. This Nova team can't shoot, can't score. It's interesting with all these Big East teams on the bubble. They're all going to kind of cannibalize each other, although I do think St. John's is in really good shape now to get in this tournament. It's probably going to take just one win in the Big East tournament to get to 20, and the committee's going to have an appetite to put them in. But I do like Seton Hall tonight. I played North Texas +2 against Florida Atlantic. I mean, this was my darling team from last year, but they are so overrated. Every game, they are overvalued. They get treated like they were, a top 10 team coming into this year, which they were, but they just haven't played to that level, and they continue to get priced to that level. They've been horrible against the spread. North Texas is not a bad team. And I also played South Carolina +5.5 at home against Tennessee. Might be a little bit of a flat spot for Tennessee. South Carolina, they play slow. They play good defense. And again, Tennessee's coming off big wins against Auburn, against Bama. So maybe they're a little flat here going into South Carolina. So I did take the points there. And those three for tonight.
Any sprinklage on the money line with the Gamecocks or no? Just the points.
I haven't yet, but I'm not opposed to it.
Not opposed to it. Well, after the break, we'll get to your thoughts on conference tournaments, if you have any futures there, and any baseball thoughts. But I'm just curious just where you stand on this. The Atlantic Sun tournament, which, of course, was the first to have begun a couple nights ago. Last night, you had a situation where the short shot, Eastern Kentucky, loses to the 10th seed Jacksonville. And then those people who had Lipscomb were like, oh, what a great opportunity. And then Lipscomb falls. And so now we're in the semis. It includes 10th seed of Jacksonville. Are you one of these people who like actively roots for the 10th seed to get into the tournament? Yes me too.
100%. It is cruel that the one that has a great season, then all of a sudden they're out one bad night. But it is fun. It's what makes March
it's
fun.
It's so great. I never understood the opposite where people are like, oh, I don't want a team like that getting in. No, this is exactly what we want. Precisely what
madness.
We want.
Chaos.
It's madness, for God's sakes. By the way, Brent Musburger, the first person to ever call it March Madness. We should point that out every year. Coming back, more Will Hill, conference tournament thoughts, baseball, to numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And so, Kelly, according to Cleaning the Glass, with Wemby off the court, the Spurs are 10.5 points worse, and Mini only 2 points worse with Gobert off the court. Oh, we're on air? I'm sorry. Put the VSiN experts to work for you and start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today. Get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code ANG. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year. That includes our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Plus our upcoming March Madness betting guide with best bets for every game and round of the tournament. Remember to use promo code ANG, though.
Promo code ANG. That's a numbers game, folks. Promo code ANG. Sign up now.
Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Sean Higgs, did Gil tell our guy Midland Bidlin that Wu-Tang is coming on? Can we get a Protect Your Bankroll remix? You battle, you're saying goodbye like Tevin Campbell. This is from Jason H11.
I've got so many questions in my mind already.
I have to root for volleyball as a big dog again. I need sushi. Talk about volleyball. Mark Francis. So I'm cruising down the road here in North Carolina listening to VSiN. And Gil says, surely not putting lines up for every team. I say to myself, yeah, like the Panthers and the Titans. Seconds later, Gil says, like Carolina and Nashville. Oh, that was yesterday. We're talking about exactas.
Exactas,
that's right.
Yeah.
He's referring to DraftKings put up Super Bowl exactas yesterday. And I just threw that out. I'm like, did they do every possible combination of every team? And Kelly's like, yeah, they did.
They sure do.
Not enough zeros on that one, but yeah, every possible combo. Will Hill, kind enough to join us again. You can follow him on Twitter at NotTheWillHill. That's two E's on the. He's got his own podcast called Shoulda Bet More. Who's your latest guest on there, Will?
I had a little bonus pod today because I the Bear, Chris Felica on Monday, but today just dropped Adnan Virk talking Oscars, talking MLB. I hope you don't mind. I passed along your number to him. I told him to block you so I don't have to fight for any listeners.
Sorry, but it's quite all right. I know what you're doing.
No, he had some interesting thoughts on Kelly liked that one. he liked some underdogs. Now he liked some underdogs. He thought there were some, you know, opportunities to take some of these categories at plus prices. Oppenheimer looks like they're going to win like 9 million categories here, which I think would be a record. But yeah, interesting podcast with Adnan.
Oppenheimer was available on the plane during vacation, and I was about to watch it. I'm like, wow, Oppenheimer's on. And I was like, this is probably not what they intended on how to watch Oppenheimer, like on a small screen on an airplane. Like, I probably shouldn't watch it.
Probably
here.
Not. Also, yeah. Like, what's it like? What do you mean on the on the airplane?
Like literally the
like
square
the back
in
of
front
the
of
seat,
you?
That yeah. situation, yeah. Like, is that movie not rated R? Do you put R-rated movies on that? Like, what if you got a kid sitting next to you?
Oh, I don't think that's a. I don't
is that not a thing?
I don't think that's a thing.
Okay,
but it's one of these movies that's intended to be watched on a massive
yeah,
screen.
Yeah, I got where you were going. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh no, you're just worried about the kid sitting next to me.
Yeah, it just feels like quite
it's
a
very benevolent,
quite a dramatic movie to like have available for everybody.
Traumatized
to watch on a plane.
Kids, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's good. So Adnan Virk on there talking Oscars and Major League Baseball. Speaking of Major League Baseball, did you add any plays recently, season longs, that we haven't spoken about before?
I added a few. I bet the New York Yankees plus 165 to win the division to
this
win the
guy.
AL East.
This
I just,
guy.
I talked myself into it. I just think they're going to be able to finally score some runs with Judge and Soto. You get Rizzo back. He's probably going to hit you, you know, 25, 30 homers. And it just slides everyone down to peg. Gleyber Torres and Stanton, these guys that were asked to hit, you know, higher in the lineup can hit a little bit lower. They'll get Dominguez back. At some point, sounds like sooner rather than they expected. And they finally added some left-handed power. You need a left-handed presence in Yankee Stadium. And these past, you know, 5 or 6 years, they've been so right-handed, so slow. When you're right-handed and slow, it's such a recipe for double plays because, I mean, you're farther away than a left-handed batter is to first base. Plus, the swing just takes you in the other direction. Mm-hmm. So they've hit so many double plays. They're a little more lefty now with Verdugo, Dominguez. I actually think Grisham will give them something, too. I don't know about the rest of the rotation after Cole. I think Rodon's the key to the whole season, where if he can pitch like he did 2-3 years ago, they're really cooking with something. But they need those guys, Rodon, Cortez, to be healthy, to be effective. I don't love the back of the bullpen. They have a habit of finding these guys that are unsung and turning them into quality arms. But I'd like another arm either in the bullpen or in the rotation or both. But to me, Baltimore, they're already dealing with some rotation issues. I know you can look at some of the advanced stats, the Pythag. Baltimore got fortunate last year in terms of how many games they won. And again, Bradish is already banged up. Means is already banged up. Tampa, I know they regenerate these players, and they always, you know, they lose a player and they turn up three more stars in his place. But at some point, like Wander Franco, McClanahan, Springs isn't going to be back for most of the year. They're down a lot of their
talent. It's got to matter at some point, right?
It's got to. Yeah. I would think so. And Toronto hasn't seemed to be able to get to that level where, you know, they're 88, 90-ish wins, but they haven't been able to get over the top and, you know, win that division. So Yankees at plus 165, I do think is a good price. I also added the Red Sox under wins. I was on the fence with doing this anyway. Yesterday, Giolito got hurt. He's out for the year, and they just have no pitching. And you look at their division, it's 56 games against the Yankees, the Orioles, the Blue Jays, the Rays. And that ballpark, when you don't have any pitching, seems like the ownership has gotten really cheap for whatever reason. I don't know if they're stacking their pennies trying to buy the Vegas NBA team or some soccer team. I guess they have different interests where ever since the Betts trade, they really cut back on their spending. So I did play under Red Sox as well. And one more quick one, 8-1. You can find this at, I think it was at Bit Rivers. Wyatt Langford to win Rookie of the Year. You're going to throw him in that lineup. That Rangers lineup was Seager, Garcia, and all the rest of the guys. He's probably going to hit 7th or 8th. 8-1 to me is a good price. He's not going to have any pressure. He hit so well last year at Florida in the minors. That team is going to be stacked when you add Evan Carter and Langford to that everyday lineup. They're going to be a lot of fun to watch. So I don't know. I think the game's in good shape. A lot of young stars, a lot of young talent. I saw Skeens throwing the ball 102, 103 miles an hour the other day. Of course, he can't crack the Pirates rotation. He's going to start in the minors because that vaunted Pirates rotation is just so dumb. But there is a lot of talent in the majors right now.
What's that? That they're manipulating that contract? Is that what they do with a guy like him?
I think so. Yeah. Seems like it.
Yeah. College hoops, the small conference tournaments of the of the markets that are up, all the ones that start this week or have started and are still up, including the Atlantic Sun, which has four teams left in their tournament, did you make any plays? Do you see any value in any of these?
I don't. I will suggest if you identify one of these teams that you like that you think is underrated, just take them on the money line, roll them over. I know it's, you know, it's good for content and people like to have the 20 or 30 to one. And it's just, it's good for the sake of conversation, but usually you do get more bang for your buck if you take the money line and roll it over. I know people don't always execute that. They'll bet it once and then they'll either chicken out or lose their money on something else. But I don't see a lot that I like. I will be interested when the bigger tournaments start next week. And this is just a great week. Finally, tomorrow, I think the day games start. And once you get going with the day games, it's
a wrap, baby. Yeah.
So good. Oh, it's the best.
It's the best.
Ohio State will be interesting to me because they've really turned their season around under this interim coach Diebler. A lot of it's a three-point regression too. They were deep into Big Ten play where they're only shooting like 23% from three, and their opponents were shooting like 43% from three. And there's a lot of variance. There's a lot of noise in that. So I'll be interested what price they hang on Ohio State. But again, a lot of these are properly priced. I will say this too. I wouldn't bet any of these favorites at minus prices like UConn minus 140, minus 150. I think some of these coaches, especially the big teams, the big-time teams, the UConns, the Arizonas, whatever, if you give them truth serum, I don't know that they even want to win these conference tournaments because it's playing three, four games.
Take
four
rest,
days.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you got to turn around, and if you're playing Thursday in the NCAA tournament, I don't know. If you go back and look at like who's won the national championship, it's really a mixed bag of like, all right, this team won their conference tournament, this team didn't. There's a lot. I don't know if you can find any differently, but there's just not a lot of rhyme or reason sometimes to the conference tournament with the big dance. So I don't know. I wouldn't get involved with any chalk. And if you like a long shot, money line rollover, I do think it's the way to go. But nothing specific really jumps out.
I guess this is when I bring it with a money line rollover, by the way, because you'll hear this not only on this show, you'll hear it all throughout the network. And we know, because we're close to the sun on betting, that oftentimes that is the better way to do things. What would you estimate? You alluded to this. Because I always say, I go, okay, that's great. And we're really saying the right thing there. But in reality, right? Like, if you think about all your casual friends, what would you say is the percentage of people who actually follow through and execute on that? As opposed to just making a futures play and just being done with it.
Over under, maybe 7%, and the under heavily juiced.
Yes, I would agree with that. That's why it's like sometimes when we say that, I'm like, okay, we have to say it, contractual obligations, but in reality, who's really following
and,
that advice?
And why do you think that is? It's what is it? They see the money in the account and they chicken out and they don't want to double up, or they get distracted, or they lose it on something else, or all of the above.
Every reason under the sun, right? Including the stupidest of all of them, which is just the human brain of they see a big number and they're like, ah, this sounds awesome. But if you if you have them have to do something diligently, it'll never happen moving forward. I think it's heavily
juiced. And they don't realize they're risking $2,000 anyway if you're playing it straight to, you know, before the tournament. They just, let's just say $100 gets up to $2,000. They get gun shy, I think, about like risking the $2,000, where if you're doing the outright, you're doing that anyway.
And also if it's not a really like long, sexy one, the fact that they would have to lay big minus money on some of those, right? On the way there. They would never do that.
Yeah, I think everything you guys said is true. I think also part of the benefit of doing a money line rollover though is you do get the option to stop if you want to stop rolling it over, right?
Another bit of logic that will go.
Right. Like you've maybe seen two or three games now and it's like, oh, I don't feel as confident about this matchup now.
Yeah. Will Hill, everybody. Should have bet more. Getting everybody. Even had my mom block me on the phone as well. I know what he's up to. I know what you're doing. Will, thank you as always.
All right. See you guys. Thanks for having me.
The great Will Hill, everybody. At not the Will Hill on Twitter. Should have bet more. And, of course, the Bear Bets pod. Sid Najad joins us to talk some golf on the other side. All his plays. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can deposit $5, get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet loses. Download the app and use promo code VSIN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midler, live from Bar Canada. Here at the D, we get tweets of beating the book. Sean's Fox Plays. I think Kirk Cousins to Atlanta is a smokescreen to get the Bears to lower their ask, as there's a real chance the Bears get left holding the bag with no suitors and no value for Fields as more teams publicly move on. DJ Jams just has one thing to say. Wu-Tang. Larry Fresh. First Usher, now a promise of Wu-Tang. Can't wait to hear Sports Betting Handicap by Supreme Mathematics. It is not a promise of Wu-Tang. It just might happen. And the fact that it might happen is just ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The fact that it might happen, I'm so glad you brought it up. And I'm glad you didn't tell me ahead of time.
Oh, no, no.
It was way better live on the air.
It was a phone call yesterday where we're at the very end as I'm about to hang up. I go, hey, one more thing. It's like a Columbo moment with 80. Jesse Welch. Going back to the name conversation from yesterday. Oh, this is me saying we were doing a whole thing about escalators and stuff yesterday, annoyances, and how Tim Lawson texted in a great one. How many people have you known for decades that still spell your name with one L kind of thing? And Jesse Welch comments, this is going back to the name conversation from yesterday. I have to share this. Every time I call somewhere and give my name, people, and this is in capitals, consistently think I say Jeffy. His name is Jesse. Think I say Jeffy. What kind of grown-ass man is going by Jeffy? Drives me nuts. Sorry about that, Jesse.
I would have thought Jesse would maybe have the same problems that I have, that on occasion it's Miss Welch or something like that. You know?
Miss Welch, that's right. Oh, okay.
Right. Miss Bidlin in emails all the time.
I'm sure this man never has his name misspelled. Never. Sia Najad joins us to talk golf, specifically, of course, the Arnold Palmer. He's the host and analyst on Monumental Sports Network, that, of course, based in the DMV. How you doing, Sia?
I'm very well, Gil, with one L and Miss Bidlin. How are you guys doing?
It's dude. We're good, man. Can I speak for Kelly? We're good. We're doing very well. Before we get to golf, of course, I am always, my eyes immediately go to one of the all-time very goods over your left shoulder, the great Santana Moss, or the very good Santana Moss, throwing up the sign for Sean Taylor there. Before we do golf, what are the Skins going to do with number two? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, Gil, it's going to be Jaden Daniels. You know, when I look at the odds, obviously it looks like Caleb Williams is going to be one. I don't think we're trading up for that pick. So to me, it's between, and I don't think we're trading down, by the way, it's between Drake May and Jaden Daniels. And when you look at the odds, Drake May is the favorite right now. I mean, a small favorite over Jaden Daniels, but a favorite nonetheless to be the number two pick. I don't see it. I think this thing is going to flip. And I think by the time we get to the draft, we're going to see the Washington staff really enamored by Jaden Daniels, what he can do with his feet, what he can do with his arm. I'm of the mind that Jaden Daniels is actually better than Caleb Williams. And I'm one of the few that's not afraid to say it. I know that's starting to percolate out there, at least in some circles. I think Caleb Williams, obviously the true number one in most people's minds, but I think Jaden Daniels, I love the ball that he throws. I love that he can move around the pocket. I love that he can run out of the pocket. I think he has so much to offer and so many headaches to give defensive coordinators. Give me Jaden Daniels with the number two pick.
I'm with you. I think that's who I've settled on too. And I know he's slight of build. And so I'm sure you have these friends too, but all my DC friends who are obviously huge Commodores fans, they have two very common statements. One is, I didn't like the way Caleb Williams cried on his mom's shoulder. That was one irrational. And then the other one was, I don't know, Jaden Daniels just seems like a taller, sleight of build RG3. Like they have RG3 injury flashbacks. So there's all this neuroses that goes around all these guys. But I'm with you. I think for me, I prefer a mobile quarterback just because I think the floor is higher, right? Like if which might be, by the way, the wrong way to look at things because you're obviously looking for the highest ceiling. But I'm just all about have the floor at a certain point, and we'll see where we go from that.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, listen, I mean, you can't predict health. Like anybody can get hurt at any given time. And the RG3 experience, I think, is going to lend itself well to future quarterbacks, including future Washington Commander quarterbacks, in the sense that, hey, you got to know when to slide. You got to know when to take a hit and when not to take a hit. Unfortunately, RG3 kind of learned that the difficult way. But when it comes to Jaden Daniels versus Drake May, I always think of it from a defensive coordinator standpoint. How do I have to game plan for this guy? And I just think it's so much more difficult to game plan for a Jaden Daniels versus a Drake May.
Any last hot take or hot bet you got in football before we go to golf for the offseason?
No, not really. Nothing in terms of futures or draft, but as we get closer to the draft, I'm sure I'll have some hot takes for you all.
All right. Arnold Palmer Invitational. You got a bunch of plays. Where do we begin, sir?
I guess we should begin with the outright market. I mean, listen, this is a condensed field. We've got only 70 players, and there's probably only 20-ish, 25 that could win this tournament, because we know at the API at Bay Hill, it's a really, really tough test. I'm zeroing in on Victor Hovland. I'm zeroing in on Ludwig Aubert, and I'm zeroing in on Will Zalatoris, who for some reason really isn't getting respect in the market, but he's certainly getting respect from me. I'll start with Victor Hovland, a very underwhelming 2024 so far. But if we look at what he did his last time out, I believe that was the Genesis Invitational. The ball striking seemed to be back. It was just the short game that really hadn't caught up quite yet. But he's been very good at this tournament. Last two top 10 finishes, including a second place finish. And when it comes to course fit, he's total driving, ball striking, all of those things that we want around the green play has actually improved for him. He can find a hot putter, and we know he has good course history here. So, I think when it comes to superstars, whether it's Rory or Victor Hovland or Scottie Scheffler, or we can name a couple, Patrick Cantlay, I think they can turn it on at any given moment. I don't think I need to see more from Victor Hovland before I bet him at 16-1 here. So really like that. And by the way, he rates out really well on difficult courses in difficult fields. So does Will Zalatoris, by the way. So I like him in that 30-1 range. And then finally, I'll just close with Ludwig. Ludwig is one of those guys that we certainly haven't seen the apex of his game yet, but when he marries the ball striking with the putting, he can really beat anybody. I think he's a great course fit because total driving accuracy, off the tee, distance, all of that stuff, it's really going to come into play here. It's why I like Will Zalatoris. It's why I like Victor Hovland. And again, it's why I like Ludwig Aubert.
You took Zalatoris top 22?
I did. Yeah. Will Zalatoris, again, I don't think this should be a plus number. We've got, a 70-person field, like I said. I really think in the top 20 market, yeah, some people are going to sneak in there. But Will Zalatoris, over his last two tournaments, if you just look at the ball striking, that back injury that I know me and Kelly were probably really worried about 2 or 3 weeks ago, it seems like, I can't predict the health of Will Zalatoris, it seems like it's a very distant thing of the past, the way he's been striking the ball. The short game is there for him. He's been good on this course. And again, the ball striking is great for Will Zalatoris lately. So a top 20 on this particular difficult test, I think it's a great number at plus 110. I would have thought this was more like minus 110. You want to give me plus money, I'm all over it.
Yeah, I should probably say top 20 also, or top 20 as well, instead of me saying top 22. People are like, I don't see a top 22 market.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I'm with you. I felt like I found a lot of value in the top 20 market this week, considering there's only 69 guys going in this tournament. Yeah. I definitely would recommend people checking those markets out if they're betting this.
By the way, we should say Scottie Scheffler is the short shot to win this. No surprise here at plus 650. Rory McIlroy, the only other person in single digits at plus 850. You have a couple matchups as well, Sia.
Yeah, let's go to Ben Ahn over Tom Kim. Speaking of underwhelming, I kind of referenced that with Victor Hovland, but again, I think he can turn it around. Tom Kim has been okay. I mean, if you actually look at the strokes gain metrics, he's been okay, but Ben Ahn's also been, like, I would say more than okay, especially in the ball striking department. Off the tee and on approach, Ben Ahn's been very good, and that's going to serve him well specifically on this course. Tom Kim, by the way, both of their short games a little checkered, but Tom Kim's ball striking, it just really hasn't been there consistently, and I think Ben Ahn has a huge edge over Tom Kim. So I'm getting minus 115 in a tournament matchup over Tom Kim. I'll take that. And then speaking of course fit, Cameron Young minus 120 over Jason Day. Jason Day has some good recent history, some good experience here too, but Cameron Young from a course fit standpoint is really, really good. And it looks like the game is really picking up. We kind of expect the ball striking, the off the tee game to be there, but we don't necessarily expect the putter to be there, but the putter's starting to come around. So the only way he loses this matchup, in my opinion, is if the around the green play really catches up to him, because sometimes that can be his downfall. But on this course, while around the green is going to be important, I don't think it's going to be super difficult necessarily. So again, I'm going to go with Cameron Young's ball striking prowess. And I'll give you a round one, 2-ball matchup. Again, 18 holes, round one for tomorrow morning. I think it starts at like 7:30. Kind of a lot of juice on this one. Steven Yeager minus 140 over CT Pan. These two guys are in two universes. I think the market's just a touch down on Steven Yeager because he missed the cut last week, but he's a good course fit. He's a good player, generally makes the cut. So I really like him in round one over CT Pan.
All right, see ya. 30 seconds. You're a man who doesn't want to be known as a first round leader guy, yet you've hit a bajillion of them. Who are your first round leader bets here?
I have, but none this season yet. I'll do it in 20 seconds, Gil. Victor Hovland, Will Zalatoris, Hideki Matsuyama, who can get red hot and is coming off a win, and Keegan Bradley, who has very good course history here. Those four all go out in the morning. I like all four to potentially be maybe tied at the top, all four for first round leader.
Hovland, Zalatoris, Hideki, Keegan Bradley. Sia Najad, by the way, S-I-A-N-E-J-A-D. Bringing it back to the whole spelling thing. For the Monumental Sports Network. Thank you, Sia. Great seeing you, man.
Thanks, guys. See you soon.
My man. Coming back on DraftKings, Stan Le Batard. We're coming back at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, with Dr. Bob next.